You're tuned in to the HR Bandit podcast, your one-way ticket to the latest and craziest in the world of work. In partnership with Timber Media, Podcaster for India Inc. is sponsored by Adrenaline eSystems Limited.
Hey, hey, welcome back. It's been a while. If this is your first time here, you're tuned into HR Bandit, the podcast where we talk about what's new in the world of work. I'm your host, Ankita Podar. If you're returning here, I have an apology for you. I know I disappeared without notice, but life sometimes gets in the way of best laid plans. I ended up taking a break and I'm so glad I did. So if you have any vacation days left in your kitty, we're coming around to the end of the year, take them, have some fun, and I can guarantee it'll be worth it. Now, a lot has happened in the past 2 months, and it was impossible for me to pick three topics, but believe me, this is our best lineup till date. Before I get into the topics, though, I have to introduce you to our guest for today. She's unique in the sense that she comes not only highly recommended by the HR community, but also by my mom. Shout out to mom who picked up the phone and demanded that I bring Kenna on the show. And this is me listening to her. To say Kenna is multi-talented is an understatement. Kenna Shree has over 16 years of experience in HR, currently leading L&D at NTPC, India's leading power giant. She's a columnist at Huffington Post, Times of India Web, besides writing for Cox and Kings, Hindustan Times, and she also runs a personal blog. She's the co-contributor to 4 published anthologies, while her debut novel is Work in Progress. She co-curated Asia's first feminist poetry festival for She the People in 2020. She's recognized for corporate storytelling skills. She's conducted workshops at PHEL, Gale, Nokia, Airtel, Maruti, Microsoft, and many more. Kenna co-founded an NGO, Mandra Foundation, in the year 2013, which works for disowned elderly, aged destitute, and victimized seniors. Now, there's a lot more she's done, but for the fear of feeling like a massive underachiever, I will stop here. And before I bring Kenna on to say hello, here's a quick glimpse into our top three stories for the day. First up, company culture. Now, this is a topic beaten to death, but with good reason. How does one preserve company culture, especially now with employees going remote, hybrid, or whatever the future is going to look like? For our second story, IPCC declared code red for humanity in August. It's a time for organizations to start getting their employees involved in the crusade for a better earth. We'll start with a quick look at Deloitte, see what they're doing, and take the conversation from there. For a third and final story, and this is my favorite, Google recently launched its work location tool, which allows you to understand how compensation changes with location in case you want to go remote. Now, I think this is brilliant. Many others do not. As always, we will include links to everything we talk about today below in the show notes. Now, I will stop my wrong monologue. Let's welcome Kenna to the show. Kenna, how are you doing?
Hey, Ankita, so happy to be here. Thank you so much, HR Bandit, for inviting me to your fantabulous podcast. But an even bigger shout out to the very fabulous and brilliant author, Tanushree. Hey, someone who I love, admire, and learn from at the same time. Hugs to you, Tanu, if you're listening to this. In fact, Ankita, it feels surreal that I have happened to work with both you and your mother separately on separate panels, one in literature and the other in HR, without realizing that they could be remotely related. I mean, funny, right?
But of course.
Absolutely. And I sort of struck a very strange chord with both of you and literally freaked out when I got to know that you are family. I mean, I'm pinching myself. Lucky me. And by the way, I've been following HR Bandit for a long while now, and I'm excited to be on the show. And I'm doing good. Even if it wasn't, a frothy cup of coffee makes up for everything that has gone wrong. So be it.
Because you mentioned coffee, I have to ask, how do you like your coffee?
Aha, now that's a question. I like it with dairy and sugar, but no, for this while, it's just black.
I'm infamous for liking my coffee iced, so much so that coffee fanatics sometimes tell me that's not how coffee is had. But anyway, coffee aside, I have to ask, it's the end of the year. We are all scuttling to finish everything we said we'll get done in 2021. Now, when I was reading out everything that you said, that you do, I have to ask, how is it that you do everything you do? More specifically, how are you going to end 2021 strong and how are you going to set yourself up for 2022? Give us some tips.
Oh, it's a very, very easy answer. Just a two-worded answer. It's called to-do list. I'm a very restless person, Ankita, essentially. And if I don't put my idle mind to work, it will take no time in becoming a devil's at home. So the reason to keep myself busy and occupied at all times is more selfish than ambitious. And I'm a very happy and keen learner. I dabble myself into everything that I see is a channel to voice up. So be it singing or dancing or writing, performing arts, poetry, storytelling, the voice inside me won't stand still for long and finds its way. And I give into newer indulgences very, very easily. But my to-do list is very simple. You know, it's not long. It's not complicated. And once I'm done with it, I quickly hop on to making another one. The idea of a new day ahead in itself is the kick that I have wanted. So 2021 list, honestly, there are lots of songs, unsung things, and undone. But what the heck? There's always an option of carry forward, right?
I love to-do lists. And in fact, I love lists like shopping lists, packing lists. Like I am infamous for filling every available space in my notebook with lists. So much so that I have to mention, I have a 22 before 22 list, essentially 22 things to get done before 22 comes in. So, yeah. Anyway, I'm going to get us moving on to our topics for today. Mm-hmm. First up, company culture, like I said. Now, a little while ago, I came across a statement by a leader who said, culture is caught, not taught, in response to a culture training session. Mm-hmm. I loved the statement so much so that, now the statement was said many years ago, but mm-hmm. I think it's more relevant today than it's ever been before. I find it hard to wrap my head around the fact that culture can be taught via trainings if every other element in the workplace does not support it. My conundrum, however, fast forward to 2020, 2021, and maybe even beyond when we're going to remote, hybrid, and so on, is how do we make culture catch? Now, especially as people are saying that the future is gig economy, you might have someone working on your payroll part-time. Is that person going to catch multiple cultures? If you're not never going to step into an office again, what does culture look like?
Ankita, I very strongly believe in the thought that if you do not develop corporate culture, it will develop itself anyway. So it doesn't happen by accident. But if it does, then you are taking a huge risk. So of course, there is a formal structure that may center around culture training effectiveness. Just as our character defines our value to our friends, so does the culture of a company define its value to those who know it. We all agree when Simon Sinek says, culture is strong when people work for each other, with each other, and it is weak when employees begin to work for themselves than for the bigger organizational goal. The question, however, is who sets it and how? If you ask
I agree.
Yes, that's a big question. Who sets it and how? And if you ask me, it's top-driven. For me, it percolates right from the leadership to the last employee in the organization. And it's easier in a physical office. So you were right when you're saying that moving to a hybrid situation or a remote work setup, it's going to be pretty difficult. Why? For example, let's say a new hire can compare a company's stated cultural values against what happens day to day to see if they align. We recruit new, like in NTPC where I work, we recruit executive trainees every year. They are young college graduates, absolutely full of energy. And then we put them through 1 year of rigorous training and induction regime, during which they not just pick up technical expertise, but also learn by observing and becoming a part of the ecosystem. Do employees come early? Do they stay up late? Do they volunteer in crisis by going out of the way? How do leaders treat their juniors? Are mistakes tolerated? Dissents accepted? Is there enough respect for families of employees? So much more, we can go on and on and on. And this would never be a part of the formal training. There are just opportunities of catching culture, quote unquote, like you said, than teaching culture. So when we talk of a remote setup or a hybrid setup, obviously the workers would have fewer opportunities to learn through observation. And if they don't see it, how are they going to believe it or even fit into it? It will then have to be consciously created there. That's what I feel.
And I think when people are remote or even in a hybrid structure, they are watching, they're still watching and learning, but it's not intentional. The things like you send emails at all times in the day, like you referred to, how when are they coming into office? When are they leaving office? And it's part like they're watching closely, but is that the culture you want to intentionally set? And the part that I have noticed is when you're in office, there's a certain energy that you catch. Mm-hmm. When you're at home, it's easier to catch the stressors than the accelerators or motivators. That's my opinion. But I'm very curious to say that if we are remote, now I know NTPC isn't remote. You've been going into office. It like never stopped, obviously, because we all need energy and electricity. But if we were to say there is a remote workplace and you could work from anywhere, what are like two or three things we can do to ensure that the right culture catches?
If I talk essentially from my organization's point of view, we are a very people-oriented company, and it's a family-driven culture. So there could be very simple steps that could speak volumes. For instance, while you're on a video meeting, why don't you put photos of your families or hobbies in the background, or make a mention of your family? Say if your kid is unwell, why not just talk about it in the virtual group and encourage others to open up as well? We believe in assigning mentors, even though they are remotely connected to each other. Making communications transparent and accessible to all people is another thing that one could do, so that the barrier disappears gradually. Like when Infosys announced during pandemic that there would be no workforce reductions tied to a company performance, didn't it speak of the company's culture towards employee welfare? I also read somewhere that IBM employees exhibited their passion for innovation and their culture of inclusion by self-organizing signups through Slack for employees who needed help. They also signed a work-from-home pledge. See, at NTPC, where I work, we hold online meetups for employees where they connect over hobbies and families. You will not believe, but we even celebrated this Hindu festival called Tej, which is essentially spouses of employees.
No yes, way.
Dressed up. Yes, they did. They were dressed up, decked up, lovely looking, gorgeous ladies and gentlemen. They are getting together over a Zoom call or Zoom meeting or a Teams meeting and organizing games and everything. See, the idea is for them to feel the connect despite locational disadvantage. So there are certain things that we can always do. And even during the second wave of pandemic, which hit India brutally and left people grieving, at NTPC, we launched something called a 24/7 online counseling services. And that was not just meant for employees, but for families and children also. So despite that no one was connected in a physical setup during the period, we made sure that the idea of NTPC family standing together for each other, it remains there, and the message is loud and clear. So we tried to walk the talk, though it's difficult. I will never say it's it's as easy as it would be in a physical setup, but it's not impossible. It has to be consciously put in there.
I agree. And I think processes play a very important role in setting culture. And I say this because you could say it's a culture of trust, it's a culture of autonomy and so on. But if for the smallest thing, you need like approval from 10 people to put it into motion, it kind of destroys everything that you might say in a training. So my recommendation is, especially now when, you know, we're anyway relooking at every single process, try and start thinking about what it talks to employees about culture. Yeah, I think that's the one part like I have thought of, but I'm still like, how do we make culture catch is probably going to be one of the big three challenges, especially for organizations who go remote first.
I think you were absolutely spot on when you said that. Let's just do away with everything that can act as a barrier while we are remotely connected or connected in a hybrid situation. And long process of approvals would be a part of that. Absolutely. Agree.
Now, culture, of course, is a topic that's endless. We could talk about that entirely. But I'm going to move us to a more sober topic. Now, UN's Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, IPCC, a group of scientists whose findings are endorsed by world's governments in August, declared code red for humanity. Now, they said human influence is very likely the main driver of everything bad that's happening with related to climate change. I'm not surprised. And they said that for many of these consequences, like the decrease in Arctic sea ice, the global retreat of glaciers since the 1990s, there's no going back. In short, the world is coming to an end. I wish I was saying that I'm exaggerating, but I don't think I am. my only hope is that the COP26, the climate summit that's happening in Glasgow, drives a few big changes. But we've seen governments can only do so much. Now, what came to me as a very, very pleasant surprise is Deloitte. Now, Deloitte is giving its employees training on climate change and bringing them into the conversation. They say the first step to solving a problem is understanding what climate change is. I have two questions for you. Should organizations set expectation on employees about climate change? And if yes, what can these expectations be?
Oh my God, the topic that you brought up. I mean, code red for humanity is deeply disturbing, Ankita. You know, the first time I read news on it, I did not want to believe it at all. And then one after the other, the validations, evidences, data, there is nothing in the report to not believe in. So code red is here and it has shaken us. It has shaken me for sure. The world is indeed coming to an end, and you're not exaggerating when you say that. If you don't take a wake-up call right now, I think it will become way too late for us. See, at an individual level, perhaps it would be a personal call for anyone to get restless about the issue and start doing something about it, or just pass it off as like, okay, it is just another scientific theory. You cannot go about changing perceptions of those who do not want to change themselves. But at a macro level, at an organizational level, it is time to act. It is time that we make them responsible and also fix accountability. For instance, I belong to an organization that is essentially into electricity and power and energy. And a couple of years ago, our basket of fuel for generation of electricity consisted of coal and a little of gas, because it's obviously cost beneficial, comparatively easily accessible. And it's an optimal solution for a nation like ours, where the demand is more than the supply. But if you look at the basket that we have in our kitty now, or what it would look like in, say, 2030, we have gone for a drastic change. Suddenly, the shift is to renewable energy resources. We are now wanting to rely on solar and hydro. We are even exploring opportunities into green hydrogen, something of the sort which we didn't think of a decade ago. But it has become almost like an order of the day. But since you've asked about organizations setting expectation on employees about climate change, which is probably at the root level or the micro level that you're talking about, I think a lot has to do with a framing of company policies. And first and foremost, it has to begin from spreading awareness. So if you go around asking employees what Code Red for Humanity actually stands, I wonder how many of them will be able to tell you, let alone understand the impact or danger we are plunging into. So there was a catastrophic flooding in Germany and Belgium that killed over 200 people. Flash flooding in London in the height of summer. The winter storms in Texas with temperatures reaching minus 13 degrees and leaving over 3 million houses and business without power. Flooding in China. What else? I mean, record-breaking snowfall in Madrid. Forest fires in Canada. The list is so long. And yet, the people are not conscious enough of whatever is happening around. So please, I would urge the organizations to invest in mass communication campaigns. Let people know what's going around. The least we can expect is to make the Code Red appreciate about Code Red, and why at all are we setting expectations on them? You mentioning about Deloitte. I mean, why don't you put it forward? What was the thing about Deloitte?
So part of it is about Deloitte, right? Telling its employees what the changes. Unfortunately, I looked for the deck. I couldn't find it, but my curiosity stays. My issue with this entire, blame game of doing something about climate change is that I have friends. Now, they very easily pass the blame to organizations. They say organizations are the biggest polluters. They should change, energy consumption, how they're reusing their resources and so on. And when I asked them, what are you doing about it? They're mostly like, well, we're going to make like a drop in the ocean. Like there's nothing we can do about it. Our role is to hold the organizations responsible. And I think that's where the conversation needs to change, because I think organizations, governments are going to hold organizations responsible. Organizations without doubt should do their bit. But I think it's time organizations turn to their employees and say, look, you have to do something about it. Stop taking your business flights, like take the train, or just stop commuting. We are all going virtual. Stop printing every goddamn thing from just because the office printer is free. Things like that. You have to have conversations. You need to change the policy. You need to, I would say, pass the pressure.
Yes.
And not just keep it at their level.
And is it too much to ask from employees to shift from, say, motor vehicles to electrical vehicles? Why not? Why not? Why don't we talk about collaborations with battery charging stations instead of petrol pumps? Like you said, treatment of end-of-life sold-out products. What about carpool? Can we do something about it? Even keeping blinds closed to help keep the temperature inside the office a little lower, choosing renewables, reducing carbon footprints. I'm surprised at people, you know, returning the Amazon packages. I'm sorry, but I'm referring to your company. But, you know, this is what everybody does. You don't like a product and you keep returning it over and over again without thinking the kind of carbon footprint it would leave in subsequent delivery of products. So these are little things that employees can do. Also facilitate them to donate time and money towards the cause in a very planned manner. And of course, please, zero tolerance to unacceptable stuff. You need to put out the placard which says the bullshit has to end.
I love that. I love that. And even policies, like I would happily set individual level goals saying, you're killing the planet. You're fired.
You're tuned in to the HR Bandit podcast, your one-way ticket to the latest and craziest in the world of work. In partnership with Timber Media, Podcaster for India Inc. is sponsored by Adrenaline eSystems Limited.
If you as an employee could change two things today, what are you going to do? And then we'll move on to our last and final topic.
As an employee, number one would easily be carpool that is instantly available. I think I could probably, if I wanted, I can do it right from tomorrow. And the next will be reducing carbon footprints. I'm, as it is, a practitioner of minimalism and slow living, so it's not a big deal for me. I actually practice it. And I would love for my friends and colleagues to join me in that. That's something that can be easily done.
Okay, I'm going to take a pledge. I'm going to try stick to this one. I print everything. I find it easier to read printed material than on a screen. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to reduce that. I'm going to drastically reduce 90% of my printing. I think I can do that. I've already started doing it because obviously the lack of access to a printer. Now I've started going back into office, so I have access to a printer again. But I pledge not to misuse the free printing.
Yeah. Yes.
With that, I'm going to bring us to our last and final topic. In many ways, I've saved the best for the last. Now we haven't talked about Google enough on this pod. But they now deserve a mention because they've launched this work location tool. Now, before I go into what the tool does, I'm going to give a quick reference to compensation, how it's done, and how wrong employees get it. I remember at the start of the pandemic, there were people like, oh, the company's saving cost on buildings, energy, XYZ, will our pay go up? And I was like, yeah, your pay isn't built on variable costs of the organization. So pay ranges have a million factors, and part of it is local market. Now, if you get paid less if the market is cheaper, you get paid more if the market is more expensive, and market rates factor in cost of living. Hence, if I was to relocate from California to Spain, my pay will change. Now, what Google has done is essentially build a tool that helps you understand how it's going to change. So if tomorrow I say, I want to work remotely from Timbuktu, not anymore from the Bay Area, this wonderful tool, now I obviously don't have access to it, but this wonderful tool is supposedly going to explain how and by how much my pay will change. I love it. I think it's brilliant. However, on the flip side, there are organizations like Pipeline Equity that said location should not be dependent, like pay should not be dependent on location. It should be dependent on the work you do. So whether you're doing the same work in Timbuktu or the Bay Area, you should get paid the same. I think that's ridiculous. Kenna, your turn.
Oh my God. I mean, what do I even say about this? The work location tool is very intriguing. In fact, I feel it's very empowering. It's always great to have good information in hand and be able to make informed choices around it. You know, what is better than employees being able to move a request for a new location or go remote depending on their work, domestic or personal preferences and get paid accordingly? What's wrong with that? I mean, that's brilliant, I think. So the employee was considering remote work, but decided to keep going to office despite the 2-hour commute. All right, in that case, apply it accordingly. But I've also read, you know, when I was, I went through this some of the research on work location tool. Since June, roughly 10,000 of the internet companies and more than 1,35,000 workers have asked for permission either to work remotely on a full-time basis or to relocate to a different office, even when COVID subsides. And Google has so far approved 85% of the requests. So, you know, people are loving it. Employees want it. I really have to see who all would not want it. I mean, isn't it a win-win situation for everyone, employer as well as the employee? It's justifiable. And what you mentioned about the pipeline equity, I really don't get that. Yeah. Ankita, you need to explain. I mean, they talk from a different perspective altogether. For them, the move is to drive and empower gender parity. They insist that while working from home, it is usually the women who are in the workforce and it negatively impacts them. So it is for pay protection of women. But somehow I don't get it. I don't feel empowered by this philosophy of location agnostic pay structure. I mean, if my company was to offer me, you know, a chance to work from a hybrid perspective or in a remote location, I would plunge and jump at it, even if it was at a decreased pay. Because probably right now, my compulsions, my domestic obligations, in that circumstance, it works best for me. So why not?
I actually sent out a tweet to Pipeline Equity asking them for more details. I never heard back. Not surprised, but you know, we have a very unilateral way of saying pay should be location agnostic. Now imagine, I took the example of Bay Area to Spain. Now imagine I was working in Spain and I could work from anywhere. And I'm like, I want to try working from the Bay Area and see what that looks like. Imagine if I switched and I didn't get a change in pay. Like I would be very, very upset. Like there is no way I can sustain myself at Spanish salaries. And I know I'm like targeting one country versus the other, but like that's just the reality of life. But I also understand there's this whole entitlement to pay, what you refer to as the endowment effect. You take something away from someone, they're always going to be displeased. Okay. So I love the fact that Google's experimenting, like someone needs to do it. I'm going to watch, I'm going to see what they're doing. But I think organizations are being outrageous these days when it comes to compensation. They just, I don't get the market at all in that space.
So I completely agree at this point, I guess. I mean, both of us probably, yes.
So with that, those were our big three topics. We agree that culture is caught, not taught. I love that statement though. Like that person should get an award. There are ways to get culture caught even when person's working remotely. Climate change, employees, do your bit. Take a pledge today. Do something. Yes, don't blame just the organizations. And yes, and earnestly from both Kenna and myself. And lastly, your pay should change with location. Like if it doesn't, your organization.
I don't. Listening to this, I wish they do.
I know. I mean, there are crazy organizations out there. But like, that's not how compensation works. Mm-hmm. So those were our three topics for today. Kenna, I loved the conversation. I am not going to let
you. Yes.
I'm not going to let you go easy. Okay. I'm going to give you the opportunity to say the last few words, send out whatever message you want to the world. And if you can say it via poetry, even better.
Oh my God. Now that's a tricky one. But since you asked for it, since Tanushree's daughter asked for it. Okay. Jokes aside, I'll share with you an expert that I wrote for a spoken word poetry, which I have not performed so far. So,
Ooh, exclusive content.
No, but that's just an excerpt, but it speaks for the poetry. I mean, I'm sure many people around would be able to relate to it. It's about this hustle of corporate life that we tend to get trapped in, and we don't even realize, but days keep on passing by and there's a daily struggle with what you wanted to do and what you're doing. So it goes like this. I think of the day that brushed past me, of the umpteen memories unmade, dreams unlived, stories unread, tales unwritten, places untraveled, lives untouched, riddles unresolved, canvases unpainted. I think of authors and artists and poets, of Frost, Tagore, Dinkar, and almost That funny fellow Pash who sold satirical dreams to poor dreamers saying, Sabse khatarnaak hota hai murda shanti se bhar jana, tadap ka na hona sab sehen kar jana, ghar se nikalna kaam par aur kaam se laut kar ghar aana, kyunki sabse khatarnaak hota hai hamare sapnon ka mar jana. And then I snug myself into the warmth of the cozy bed, dig my head inside the pillow, swallow a lump of guilt, but breathe a whiff of even longer hope to wait for another morning, another day, another unstoppable journey. Well, this was it.
Oh my God, Jenna, I'm going to cry. Like this is, oh, wow. Okay, I'm speechless.
Yes, to everybody who's listening, may your journey be lovely and happy and more meaningful than your destination. And sending you lots and lots of hugs, Ankita. To you, HR Bandit, may you grow from strength to strength.
For the first time ever, Kenna, I think you have managed to successfully leave me speechless. So with that, on behalf of Kenna, myself, and NHRDN,
yay,
we are out.
You're tuned in to the HR Bandit podcast, your one-way ticket to the latest and craziest in the world of work. In partnership with Timber Media, Podcaster for India Inc. is sponsored by Adrenaline eSystems Limited.